And neither are you. Kitty's matured a lot since you've been gone. And so have I. Did you know that Kitty packs her own lunch now? And she helps with the laundry. I don't have to nag her to do her homework either. She just does it on her own.
Really? Then I'm impressed.
Why can't she just say, "Good job, Lara Jean"? That's it. If she could just acknowledge that I've been doing my part to keep the family going since she's been gone. But no. Chapter 61. At 6:30 in the morning, the day of the ski trip, Daddy drops me off at school. It's not even light out yet. It seems like every day the sun takes longer and longer to come up. Before I hop out of the car, my dad pulls a hat out of his coat pocket. It's light pink yarn with a pom-pom on top. He fits it on my head so it covers my ears.
"I found this in the hall closet. I think it was one of your mom's. She was such a great skier."
"I know. I remember."
"Promise me you'll go out on the slopes at least once."
"I promise."
"I'm so glad you're doing this. It's good for you to try new things."
I smile weakly. If he only knew what went down at the ski trip, he wouldn't be so glad then. Then I spot Peter and his friends messing around outside by the charter bus. "Thanks for the ride, Daddy. See you tomorrow night." I give him a peck on the cheek and grab my duffel bag.
"Zip up your coat,"
he calls out as I shut the car door. I zip up my coat and watch his car drive off. Across the parking lot, Peter's talking to Genevieve. He says something that makes her laugh. Then he sees me and gestures at me to come over. Genevieve walks away, looking down at her clipboard. When I get there, he takes my duffel bag off my shoulder and puts it next to his.
"I'll put this on the bus."
"It's freezing," I say, my teeth chattering. Peter pulls me in front of him and puts his arms around me.
"I'll keep you warm."
I look up at him like, so cheesy, but his attention is somewhere else. He's watching Genevieve. He snuggles against my neck and I squirm away from him.
"What's with you?"
he asks. "Nothing," I say. Ms. Davenport and Coach White are looking through kids' bags. Ms. Davenport's doing the girls and Coach White is doing the boys. "What are they looking for?" I ask Peter.
"Alcohol."
I whip out my phone and text Chris. "Don't bring alcohol. They are checking." No response. "Are you awake?"
"Wake up!"
But then her mom's SUV pulls into the parking lot, and she stumbles out of the passenger seat. She looks like she just woke up. What a relief. Peter can talk to Genevieve all he wants. I'll be sharing a seat with Chris and eating the snacks I packed. I have strawberry gummies and the wasabi peas that Chris loves and Pocky sticks. Peter groans.
"Chris is coming?"
I ignore him and wave at her. Genevieve's standing by the bus with her clipboard when she spots Chris, too. She has a big frown on her face. She marches right up to Chris and says, "You didn't sign up." I run over to them and hover next to Chris. In a small voice, I say, "In the announcements last week, they said there were still spots left." "Yeah, that you had to sign up for." Genevieve shakes her head. "I'm sorry, but Chrissy can't come if she didn't sign up or give a deposit." I wince. Chris hates being called Chrissy. She always has. She started going by Chris as soon as we got to high school, and the only people who still call her that are Genevieve and their grandma. Peter shows up beside me out of nowhere.
"What's going on?"
he asks. Folding her arms, Genevieve says, "Chrissy didn't sign up for the ski trip, so I'm sorry, but she can't come." I'm panicking, but all the while Chris is smirking and saying nothing. Peter rolls his eyes and says,
"Jen, just let her come. Who gives a shit if she didn't sign up?"
Her cheeks flush with anger. "I didn't make the rules, Peter. Should she just get to come for free? How is that fair to everyone else?" Chris finally speaks.
"Oh, I already talked to Davenport, and she said it was cool."
Chris makes a kissy face at Genevieve.
"Too bad, Jen."
"Fine, whatever, I don't care." Genevieve turns on her heel and spins off in Ms. Davenport's direction. Chris watches her go, grinning. I tug on her coat sleeve.
"Why didn't you just say so from the beginning?" I whisper.
"Avi, because it was more fun that way."
She slings her arm around my shoulder.
It's going to be an interesting weekend, Covey.
Worried, I whisper. You didn't bring any alcohol, did you? They're checking bags.
Don't worry about me. I'm covered.
When I give her a dubious look, she whispers back.
Shampoo bottle filled with tequila at the bottom of my bag.
I hope you washed it out really well. You could get sick. I'm envisioning Chris and company trying to take shots of bubbly tequila and then having to go to the hospital to get their stomachs pumped. Chris ruffles my hair.
Oh, Lara Jean.
We file onto the bus, and Peter slides into a seat in the middle, and I shuffle forward.
Hey, he says, surprised. You're not going to sit with me?
I'm sitting with Chris. I try to keep walking down the aisle, but Peter grabs my arm.
Lara Jean, are you kidding me? You have to sit with me.
He looks around to see if anybody's listening.
You're my girlfriend.
I shake him off. We're breaking up soon, aren't we? We might as well make it look more realistic. When I slide into the seat next to her, Chris is shaking her head at me.
What?
I couldn't just let you sit alone. You came here for me, after all. I open up my backpack and show her the snacks.
See? I brought your favorite things.
What do you want to eat first, gummies or Pocky?
It's barely even morning, she grouses.
Then,
hand me the gummies.
Smiling, I rip open the bag for her.
Have as much as you want.
I stop smiling when I see Genevieve get on the bus and sit down in the seat next to Peter.
You did that, Chris says.
For you?
Which isn't true, not really. I think maybe I'm just tired of all this. This in-betweenness of being somebody's girlfriend, but not really.
Chris stretches.
I know you're all about hoes before bros, but if I were you, I'd be careful. My cousin's a barracuda.
I stuff a gummy into my mouth and chew. It's hard to swallow. I watch Genevieve whisper something in Peter's ear, and Chris falls asleep right away, just like she said, her head on my shoulder. The lodge is exactly the way Peter described. There's a big fireplace and bearskin rugs and lots of little nooks. It's snowing outside, tiny little whisper flakes. Chris is in good spirits. Halfway through the bus ride, she woke up and started flirting with Charlie Blanchard, who's going to take her out on the Black Diamond slopes. We even lucked out with a double room instead of a triple, because all the other girls had signed up for triples together. Chris went off to snowboard with Charlie. She invited me to come along, but I said no thanks. I tried to ski next to Margot when she snowboarded once, and it ended up with us coming down the slopes at different times and waiting for each other, and then losing each other all day. If Peter were to invite me to go snowboarding with him, I think I'd go. But he doesn't, and I'm hungry anyway, so I go to the lodge to eat lunch. Ms. Davenport is there looking at her cell phone and eating a bowl of soup. Ms. Davenport is young, but she presents herself old. I think it's her heavy foundation and her severe part down the middle. She isn't married. Chris told me she saw her having an argument with some guy outside the Waffle House once, so I guess she has a boyfriend. When she spots me sitting alone eating a sandwich by the fireplace, she waves me over. I carry my plate to her table and sit down across from her. I'd rather eat alone and read my book, but it's not like I have much of a choice in the matter. I ask her, do you have to stay here in the lodge all weekend, or can you go ski too? I'm officially home base, she says, wiping the corners of her mouth. Coach White's on slope duty. That doesn't seem very fair. I don't mind. I actually like sitting in the lodge. It's peaceful. Besides, somebody has to be here for emergencies. She takes another bite of soup. What about you, Lara Jean? Why aren't you out on the slopes with everybody else?
I'm not the best skier, I say, feeling embarrassed.
Oh, really?
I hear Kavinsky's a very good snowboarder.
You should get him to teach you. Aren't you two dating?
Ms. Davenport loves being in on student drama. She calls it having her finger on the pulse, but really, she's just a gossip. If you give her an opening, she'll burrow in for as much dirt as she can. I know she and Genevieve are close. I have a quick flash of Genevieve and Peter on the bus with their heads close together, and the picture makes my heart squeeze. Our contract isn't over yet. Why should I let her have him back even 1 second early?
Yes, I say. We're together.
Then I stand up. You know what? I think I will go check out the slopes.
Chapter 62. I'm bundled up in Margot's pink ski bib and the pom-pom hat and my parka, and I feel like an Easter treat. A strawberry-flavored marshmallow. As I try to click into my skis, a group of girls from school walk by in cute yoga-ish ski pants. I didn't even know those existed. I always think I could like skiing, and then I go on a ski trip and I remember, oh yeah, I hate it. All the other kids are on the Black Diamond slopes, and I'm on Green Circle, aka the Bunny Slope. I pizza wedge down the whole way, and little kids keep zooming by me, which makes me lose my concentration because I'm terrified they're going to run into me. They whoosh back and forth like Olympic skiers. Some of them aren't even using poles. They're like Kitty. She can go down Black Diamond slopes. She and my dad love it. Margot, too, though Margot prefers snowboarding to skiing now. I've been keeping my eyes peeled for Peter, but I haven't seen him yet, and it's starting to feel a bit bleak out here all alone. I'm considering giving the intermediate slope a try, just for kicks, when I spot Peter and all his friends carrying their snowboards. No Genevieve in sight.
Peter!
I call out, feeling very relieved. He turns his head, and I think he sees me, but he keeps walking. Huh. He saw me. I know he saw me. After dinner, Chris goes back to the slopes to snowboard. She says she's addicted to the rush. I'm heading back to the room when I run into Peter again, this time in swimming trunks and a hoodie. He's with Gabe and Durrell. They have towels around their necks.
Hey, Large, Gabe says, flicking me with his towel. Where have you been all day?
I've been around. I look over at Peter, but he won't meet my eyes. I saw you guys on the slopes.
Durrell says,
Then why didn't you holler at us? I wanted to show off my ollies for you.
Teasingly, I say, Well, I called Peter's name, but I guess he didn't hear me.
Peter finally looks me in the eyes.
Nope, I didn't hear you.
His voice is cold and indifferent and so un-Peter-like. The smile fades from my face.
Gabe and Durrell exchange looks like, ooh. And Gabe says to Peter,
We're gonna head out to the hot tub.
And they trot off. Peter and I are left standing in the lobby, neither of us saying anything. I finally ask, Are you mad at me or something?
Why would I be mad?
And then it's back to quiet again. I say, You know, you're the one who talked me into coming on this trip. The least you could do is talk to me.
The least you could do was sit next to me on the bus, he bursts out.
My mouth hangs open. Are you really that mad that I didn't sit next to you on the bus? Peter lets out an impatient breath of air.
Lara Jean, when you're dating someone, there are just certain things you do, okay? Like sit next to each other on a school trip that's pretty much expected.
I just don't see what the big deal is, I say. How can he be this mad over such a tiny thing?
Forget it.
He turns like he's going to leave, and I grab his sweatshirt sleeve. I don't want to be in a fight with him. I just want it to be fun and light the way it always is with us. I want him to at least still be my friend, especially now that we're at the end. I say, Come on, don't be mad. I didn't realize that it was that big of a deal. I swear I'll sit next to you on the way home, okay? He purses his lips.
But you do get why I was pissed.
I nod back. Mm-hmm.
All right, then. You should know that you missed out on mocha sugar donuts.
My mouth falls open.
How'd you get those? I thought the shop didn't open that early.
I went out and got them last night, specifically for the bus ride, Peter says. For you and me.
Aw, I'm touched. Well, are there any left?
No, I ate them all.
He looks so smug that I reach out and swat at his hoodie strings.
You creep,
I say, but I mean it affectionately. Peter grabs my hand mid-swat and says,
Want to hear something funny?
What?
I think I started liking you.
I go completely still. Then I pull my hand away from his, and I start to gather my hair into a ponytail, and then I remember I don't have a hair tie. My heart is thudding in my chest, and it's hard to think all of a sudden.
Stop teasing.
I'm not teasing. Why do you think I kissed you that day at McLaren's house back in 7th grade? It's why I went along with this thing in the first place. I always thought you were cute.
My face feels hot. In a quirky way. Peter grins his perfect grin.
So, I guess I must like quirky then.
Then he leans his head closer to mine, and I blurt out,
"But aren't you still in love with Genevieve?"
Peter frowns.
"Why are you always bringing up Jen? I'm trying to talk about us, and all you want to do is talk about her. Yeah, Jen and I have history. I'm always going to care about her."
He shrugs.
"But now, I like you."
People are walking in and out of the lodge. A guy from school walks by and claps Peter on the shoulder.
"What up?"
Peter says. When he's gone, Peter says to me,
"So what do you say?"
He's looking at me expectantly. He's expecting me to say yes. I want to say yes, but I don't want to be with a boy whose heart belongs to somebody else. Just once, I want to be somebody's first choice.
"You might think you like me, but you don't. If you did, you wouldn't still like her."
Peter shakes his head.
"What Jen and I have is completely separate from you and me," he says.
"How can that be true when from the very first minute, this has been about Genevieve?"
"That's not fair," he objects. "When we started this thing, you liked Sanderson."
"Not anymore." I swallow hard. "But you still love Genevieve." Frustrated, Peter backs away from me and runs his hands through his hair.
"God, what makes you such an expert on love? You've liked 5 guys in your life. One was gay, one lives in Indiana or Montana or someplace. McLaren moved away before anything could actually happen. One was dating your sister. And then there's me. What do we all have in common? What's the common denominator?"
I feel all the blood rush to my face.
"That's not fair."
Peter leans in close and says,
"You only like guys you don't have a shot with because you're scared." "What are you so scared of?"
I back away from him right into the wall. "I'm not scared of anything."
"The hell you're not. You'd rather make up a fantasy version of somebody in your head than be with a real person."
I glare at him.
"You're just mad because I didn't die of happiness because the great Peter Kavinsky said he liked me. Your ego really is that enormous."
His eyes flash.
"Hey, I'm sorry I didn't show up on your doorstep with flowers and profess my undying love for you, Lara Jean, but guess what? That's not real life. You need to grow up."
That's it. I don't have to listen to this. I turn on my heel and walk away. Over my shoulder, I say,
"Enjoy the hot tub."
"I always do,"
he calls back. I'm shaking. Is it true? Could he be right? Back at the room, I change into my flannel nightie and put on thick socks. I don't even go wash up. I just turn out the lights and crawl into bed. I can't fall asleep, though. Every time I close my eyes, I see Peter's face.
How dare he say I need to grow up? What does he know about anything, as if he's so mature?
But is he right about me? Do I only like the boys I can never have? I've always known Peter was out of my reach. I've always known he didn't belong to me. But tonight, he said he liked me. The thing I've been hoping for, he said it. So why didn't I just tell him I liked him back when I had the chance?
Because I do. I like him back. Of course I do. What girl wouldn't fall for Peter Kavinsky, handsomest boy of all the handsome boys?
Now that I really know him, I know he's so much more than that. I don't want to be afraid anymore. I want to be brave. I want life to start happening.
I want to fall in love, and I want a boy to fall in love with me back.
Before I can talk myself out of it, I put on my puffy coat, slip my key card in my pocket, and head off to the hot tub.
Chapter 63. The hot tub is behind the main lodge, tucked in the woods on a wooden platform. On the way there, I run into kids with wet hair who are on their way back to their rooms before curfew. Curfew is at 11, and it's already 10:45. There's not much time left. I hope Peter's still out there. I don't want to lose my nerve. So I quicken my pace, and that's when I spot him, alone in the hot tub, his head tipped back with his eyes closed.
"Hi," I say, and my voice echoes into the woods. His eyes fly open. Nervously, he looks over my shoulder.
"Lara Jean, what are you doing out here?"
"I came to see you," I say, and my breath comes out in white puffs. I start taking off my boots and socks. My hands are shaking, and not because it's cold. I'm nervous.
What are you doing?"
Peter's looking at me like I'm crazy.
"I'm getting in."
Shivering, I unzip my puffy coat and set it on the bench. Steam is rising out of the water. I dip my feet in and sit down on the ledge of the hot tub. It's hotter than a bath, but it feels nice. Peter's still watching me warily. My heart is racing out of control, and it's difficult to look him in the eyes. I've never been so scared in my life.
"That thing you brought up earlier. You caught me off guard, so I didn't know what to say, but... well, I like you too."
It comes out so fumbly and uncertain, and I wish I could start over and say it smoothly and confidently. I try again, louder.
"I like you, Peter."
Peter blinks, and he looks so young all of a sudden.
"I don't understand you girls. I think I have you figured out, and then...
and then...
and then?" I hold my breath as I wait for him to speak.
"I'm so nervous. I keep swallowing, and it sounds loud in my ears. Even my breathing sounds loud, even my heartbeat."
His pupils are dilated. He's looking at me so hard. He's staring at me like he's never seen me before.
"And then, I don't know."
I think I stop breathing when I hear him say, "I don't know." Did I screw things up that badly that now he doesn't know? It can't be over. Not when I finally found my courage. I can't let it be. My heart is pounding like a million trillion beats a minute as I scoot closer to him. I bend my head down and press my lips against his, and I feel his jolt of surprise. And then he's kissing me back, open mouth, soft-lipped, kissing me back. And at first I'm nervous, but then he puts his hand on the back of my head, and he strokes my hair in a reassuring way, and I'm not so nervous anymore. It's a good thing I'm sitting down on this ledge, because I am weak in the knees. He pulls me into the water, so I'm sitting in the hot tub, too, and my nightgown is soaked now, but I don't care. I don't care about anything. I never knew kissing could be this good. My arms are at my side, so the jets won't make my skirt fly up. Peter's holding my face in his hands, kissing me.
"Are you okay?"
he whispers. His voice is different. It's ragged and urgent and vulnerable somehow. He doesn't sound like the Peter I know. He is not smooth or bored or amused. The way he's looking at me right now, I know he would do anything I asked, and that's a strange and powerful feeling. I wind my arms around his neck. I like the smell of chlorine on his skin. He smells like pool and summer and vacations. It's not like in the movies. It's better because it's real.
"Touch my hair again," I tell him, and the corners of his mouth turn up.
I lean into him and kiss him. He starts to run his fingers through my hair, and it feels so nice I can't think straight. It's better than getting my hair washed at the salon. I move my hands down his back and along his spine, and he shivers and pulls me closer. A boy's back feels so different than a girl's back. More muscular, more solid somehow.
In between kisses, he says, "It's past curfew. We should go back inside."
"I don't want to," I say. "All I want is to stay and be here with Peter in this moment."
"Me either, but I don't want you to get in trouble," Peter says. He looks worried, which is so sweet.
Softly, I touch his cheek with the back of my hand. It's smooth. I could look at his face for hours. It's so beautiful.
Then I stand up, and immediately I'm shivering. I start wringing the water out of my nightgown, and Peter jumps up out of the hot tub and gets his towel, which he wraps around my shoulders. Then he gives me his hand, and I step out, teeth chattering. He starts drying me off with the towel, my arms and legs. I sit down to put on my socks and boots. He puts my coat on me last. He zips me right in. Then we run back inside the lodge. Before he goes to the boy's side and I go to the girl's side, I kiss him one more time, and I feel like I'm flying.
Chapter 64. When I see Peter at the bus the next morning, he's standing around with all his lacrosse friends, and at first I feel shy and nervous, but then he sees me and his face breaks into a grin.
"Come here, Covey,"
he says, so I go to him and he throws my tote over his shoulder. In my ear, he says,
"You're sitting with me, right?"
I nod. As we make our way onto the bus, somebody wolf whistles. It seems like people are staring at us, and at first I think it's just my imagination, but then I see Genevieve look right at me and whisper to Emily Nussbaum. It sends a chill down my spine.
"Genevieve keeps staring at me," I whisper to Peter.
"It's because you're so adorably quirky," he says.
And he rests his hands on my shoulders and gives me a kiss on the cheek, and I forget all about Genevieve. Peter and I sit in the middle of the bus with Gabe and the lacrosse guys. I wave to Chris so she'll sit with us, but she's cozy with Charlie Blanchard. I haven't had a chance to tell her about last night. When I got back to the room, she was already asleep. This morning, we both overslept and there wasn't time. I'll tell her all about it later, but for now, it's kind of nice that Peter and I are the only ones who know about it. The way down the mountain, I share my pocky sticks with the boys, and we play a heated round of Uno, which I also brought. An hour into the trip, we stop at a rest stop diner for breakfast. I eat a cinnamon bun, and under the table, Peter and I hold hands. I go to use the bathroom, and there's Genevieve, alone, applying lip gloss with a little brush. I step inside the stall to pee and hope she'll be gone by the time I come out, but she's still there. I wash my hands quickly, and then she says,
"Did you know that when we were kids, I used to wish I was you?"
I freeze. Genevieve snaps her compact shut. "I used to wish your dad was my dad and Margot and Kitty were my sisters. I loved coming over to your house. I would hope and pray that you'd invite me to sleep over. I hated being at home with my dad." Haltingly, I say, I didn't know that. I used to like going to your house because your mom was so nice to me."
"She really liked you," Genevieve says.
I screwed up all my courage and I ask, "So why did you stop being friends with me?" Genevieve narrows her eyes at me.
"You really don't know?"
"No."
"You kissed Peter that day at my house in seventh grade. You knew I liked him, but you kissed him anyway."
I recoil and she continues, "I always knew your goody-goody act was fake. It's no wonder you and my cousin are BFFs now. Although at least Chris owns her sluttiness. She doesn't put on an act." My whole body goes rigid. "What are you talking about?" She laughs, and it's chilling how happy she sounds. That's when I know I'm already dead. I brace myself for whatever mean thing will come out of her mouth, but even still, I'm not ready for what comes next.
"I'm talking about how you and Peter had full-on sex in the hot tub last night?"
My mind goes blank. I might even black out for a second. I can feel myself sway on my feet. "Somebody, come quick with the smelling salts. I'm about to faint." My head is swimming. "Who told you that?" I choke out. "Who said that?" Genevieve tilts her head to the side.
"Everybody?
But we didn't."
I'm sorry, but I think it's absolutely disgusting. I mean, sex in a hot tub? A public hot tub? It's just... She shudders. God only knows what kind of stuff is floating around in there now. Families use that hot tub, Lara Jean. There could be a family in there right now. Tears are spiking my eyes. All we did was kiss. I don't know why people would even say that. Because Peter's telling them you did? My whole body goes cold. It's not true. There's no way that's true. All the guys think he's a god because he got sweet little Lara Jean Covey to give it up in the hot tub. Just so you know, the only reason Peter ever dated you was to make me jealous. His ego couldn't take the fact that I dumped him for an older guy. He was using you. If he got free sex out of it, all the better. But he still came running whenever I called. That's because he loves me. He'll never love another girl as much as he loves me. Whatever she sees in my face must please her because she smiles. Now that Blake and I are done, well, I guess we'll see, won't we? I stand there mute and numb as she fluffs her hair in the mirror. But don't worry. Now that you're a slut, I'm sure you'll have plenty of guys who'll want to date you. For a night. I flee. I run out of the ladies' room and out the doors, back onto the bus, and I cry. Chapter 65. People are starting to file back on the bus. I can feel their eyes on me, so I keep my head turned toward the window. I run my finger along the edge of the foggy glass. The window is cold, so it leaves a trail. Chris slides in next to me. In a low voice, she says, I just heard something cray-cray. Dully, I say, what did you hear? That Peter and I had sex in the hot tub last night? Oh, my God, yeah, are you okay? My chest feels really tight. If I get in a good breath, I'm going to start crying again, I know it. I close my eyes. We didn't have sex. Who told you that? Charlie. Peter's making his way down the aisle. He stops at our seat.
Hey, why didn't you come back to the table? Is everything okay?
Peter is looming over the seat, looking at me with concerned eyes. In a quiet voice, I say, Everybody's saying how we had sex in the tub. Peter groans.
People need to mind their own business.
He doesn't sound surprised, not at all. So you already knew?
Some of the guys were asking me about it this morning.
But where did they even get that idea? I feel like I'm going to be sick. Peter shrugs.
I don't know. Maybe somebody saw us. What does it even matter? It's not true.
I screw my lips together tight. I can't cry right now because if I start, I'll never be able to stop. I will cry the whole way home and everyone will see, and I can't have that. I fix my gaze somewhere over Peter's shoulder.
I don't get it. Why are you mad at me?
He's still confused. People are starting to bottleneck behind Peter. They need to get to their seats. People are waiting behind you, I say. Peter says,
Chris, can I have my seat?
Chris looks at me, and I shake my head.
It's my seat now, Kavinsky, she says.
Come on, Lara Jean,
Peter says, touching my shoulder. I jerk away from him, and his mouth drops open. People are looking at us and whispering and snickering. Peter glances over his shoulder, his face red. Then he finally makes his way down the aisle.
Are you okay?
Chris asks. I can feel my eyes welling up.
No, not really.
She sighs.
It's not fair for the girl. Guys have it easy. I'm sure they were all congratulating him, pounding him on the back for being such a stud.
Sniffling, I say,
Do you think he's the one who told people?
Who knows?
A tear trickles down to my cheek, and Chris wipes it away with her sweater sleeve. It might not have been him, but it doesn't matter, Lara Jean. Because even if he didn't encourage all the talk, I doubt he discouraged it, if you know what I'm saying. I shake my head.
What I'm saying is, I'm sure he denied it with a shit-eating grin on his face. That's how guys like Peter are.
They love to look like the man, have all the other guys look up to them.
Bitterly, she says, they care more about their reputation than yours.
She shakes her head.
But what's done is done. You just gotta hold your head up and act like you don't give a shit.
I nod, but more tears leak out.
I'm telling you, he isn't worth it. Let Jen have him.
Chris tousles my hair.
What else can you do, kid?
Genevieve comes on board last. I quickly straighten up and wipe my eyes and brace myself. But she doesn't go directly to her seat. She stops at Bethy Morgan's seat and whispers something in her ear. Bethy gasps and turns in her seat and looks right at me.
Oh, my God.
Chris and I watch as Genevieve goes from seat to seat.
Bitch, Chris breathes.
Tears burn my eyes. I'm just gonna go to sleep now. And I rest my head on Chris's shoulder, and I cry. She keeps her arm tight around me. Chapter 66. Margot and Kitty pick me up from school. They ask me how the trip was, if I stayed on the bunny slope all day. I try to be upbeat. I even make up a story about how I went down a blue circle slope. Softly, Margot asks, "Is everything okay?" I falter. Margot always knows when I'm not telling the truth. "Yeah, I'm just tired. Chris and I stayed up late talking." "Take a nap when we get home," Margot advises. My phone buzzes and I look down at it. A text from Peter. "Can we talk?" I turn off my phone. "I think maybe I'll just sleep right through Christmas break," I say. Thank God and Jesus for Christmas break. At least I have 10 days before I have to go back to school and face everyone. Maybe I'll just never go back. Maybe I can convince Daddy to homeschool me. When Daddy and Kitty go to bed, Margot and I wrap presents in the living room. Mid-wrap, Margot decides that we should have recital party the day after Christmas. I'd hoped she'd forgotten all about her grand idea to have recital party, but Margot's memory has always been killer. "It'll be a post-Christmas, pre-New Year's Eve party," she says, tying a bow on one of Kitty's presents from Daddy. "It's too last minute," I say, carefully cutting a sheet of rocking horse wrapping paper. I'm being extra careful because I want to save a strip of it for a background page in Margot's scrapbook, which is nearly done. "No one will come."
"Yes, they will. We haven't had one in ages. Tons of people used to come."
Margot gets up and starts pulling down Mommy's old cookbooks and stacking them on the coffee table.
"Don't be a Grinch. I think this should be a tradition that we bring back for Kitty's sake."
I cut off a strip of fat green ribbon. Maybe this party will help me take my mind off things. "Find that Mediterranean chicken dish Mommy used to make, with the honey yogurt dip?"
"Yes! And remember the caviar dip? People love the caviar dip. We have to make that too. Should we do cheese straws or cheese puffs?"
"Cheese puffs," I say. Margot's so excited about it that even in my current state of self-pity, I can't begrudge her. She gets a pen and paper from the kitchen and starts writing things down.
"So, we said the chicken dish, caviar dip, cheese puffs, punch. We can bake some cookies or brownies. We'll invite all the neighbors, Josh and his parents, the Shaws, Miss Rothschild. Who of your friends do you want to invite, Chris?"
I shake my head. Chris is visiting her relatives in Boca Raton.
"What about Peter? He could bring his mom, and doesn't he have a younger brother?"
I can tell she's trying. "Let's leave Peter off," I say. Her forehead creases and she looks up from her list.
"Did something happen on the ski trip?"
Too quickly, I say, "No, nothing happened."
"Then why not?"
"I want to get to know him better, Lara Jean."
"I think he might be going out of town, too."
I can tell Margot doesn't believe me, but she doesn't press me further. She sends the Evites out that night, and right away there are 5 yeses. In the comments section, Aunt D, not our real aunt, but one of Mommy's best friends, writes, "Margot, I can't wait to hear you and Dad sing Baby It's Cold Outside." Another recital party tradition. Margot and Daddy sing Baby It's Cold Outside, and I am always commissioned to sing Santa Baby. I used to do it lying on top of the piano with my mom's high heels on and our grandma's fox stole.
Not this year. No way. When Margot tries to get me to go with her and Kitty to deliver our cookie baskets to the neighbors the next day, I beg off and say I'm tired. I go up to my room to put the finishing touches on Margot's scrapbook and listen to only the slow songs from Dirty Dancing, and I keep checking my phone to see if Peter's texted again. He hasn't, but Josh has. I heard what happened. Are you okay?
So even Josh knows? He's not even in our grade. Does the whole school know?
I write back, it isn't true. And he writes back, you don't have to tell me. I didn't believe it for a second. Which makes me feel weepy. He and Margot have hung out once since she's been home, but they haven't taken that DC trip Josh mentioned. It's probably for the best if I go ahead and take the Josh and Margot page out of the scrapbook. I stay up late just in case Peter texts again. I think to myself, if Peter calls or texts me tonight, I'll know he's thinking about me too, and maybe I'll forgive him. But he doesn't text or call. Around 3 a.m., I throw away Peter's notes. I delete the picture of him from my phone. I delete his number. I think that if I just delete him enough, it will be like none of it ever happened, and my heart won't hurt so badly. Chapter 67. Christmas morning. Kitty wakes up everyone while it is still dark out, which is her tradition, and Daddy makes waffles, which is his tradition. We only ever eat waffles on Christmas because we all agree it's too much trouble to lug the waffle iron out and clean it and store it back on the cabinet top shelf where we keep it. And anyway, it makes waffles more of a special occasion this way. We take turns opening presents to make it last longer. I give Margot her scarf and the scrapbook, which she loves. She pores over every page, exclaiming over my handiwork, marveling over my font choices and paper scraps. Hugging it to her chest, she says, "This is the perfect gift." And I feel like all the tension and bad feelings between us evaporate into nothingness. Margot's gift to me is a pale pink cashmere sweater from Scotland. I try it on over my nightgown, and it's so soft and luxurious. Kitty's present from Margot is an art set with oil pastels and watercolors and special markers, which makes Kitty squeal like a piglet. In return, Kitty gives her socks with monkeys on them. I give Kitty a new basket for her bike and the ant farm she asked for months ago, and Kitty gives me a book on knitting. "So you can get better," she says. The three of us pitched in for Daddy's present. A thick Scandinavian sweater that makes him look like an ice fisherman. It's a little too big, but Daddy insists he likes it that way. He gives Margot a fancy new e-reader, Kitty a bike helmet with her name on it, Catherine, not Kitty, and me a gift certificate to Linden and White. "I wanted to get you that locket necklace you're always looking at, but it was gone," he says. "But I bet you'll find something else you like just as much." I jump up and throw my arms around him. I feel like I could cry. Santa, a.k.a. Daddy, brings silly gifts like sacks of coal and water guns with disappearing ink inside, and also practical things like athletic socks and printer ink and my favorite kind of pens. I guess Santa shops at Costco, too. When we're done opening presents, I can tell Kitty is disappointed there is no puppy, but she doesn't say anything. I pull her into my arms and whisper to her, "There's always your birthday next month." And she nods. Daddy goes to see if the waffle iron is hot, and the doorbell rings. "Kitty, could you get that?" he calls from the kitchen. Kitty goes to the door, and seconds later we hear her high-pitched scream. Margot and I leap up and run to the door, and right there on the welcome mat is a basket with a biscuit-colored puppy in it and a ribbon around its neck. We all start jumping up and down and screaming. Kitty scoops the puppy up in her arms and runs into the living room with it, where Daddy stands grinning. "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!" she squeals. "Thank you, thank you, thank you!" According to Daddy, he picked the puppy up from the animal shelter two nights ago, and our neighbor, Ms. Rothschild, has been hiding him in her house. It's a boy, by the way. We figure that out pretty quick since he pees all over the kitchen floor. He's a Wheaton Terrier mix, which Kitty declares is far better than an Akita or a German Shepherd. "I always wanted a dog with bangs," I say, cuddling him to my cheek. "What should we name him?" Margot asks.
We all look to Kitty, who chews on her bottom lip in a contemplative way.
I don't know, she says.
How about Sandy? I suggest. Kitty sneers. Unoriginal. So I say, what about Francois? We can call him Frankie for short.
No thanks, Kitty says.
Cocking her head, she says, what about Jamie?
Jamie, Daddy repeats. I like it.
Margot nods. It has a nice ring to it. What's his full name? I ask, setting him down on the floor. Kitty promptly says, Jamie Fox Pickle, but we'll only call him that when he's in trouble. She claps her hands and coos. Come here, Jamie! And he skitters over to her, tail wagging like mad. I've never seen her so happy or so patient. She spends all of Christmas Day trying to teach him tricks and taking him outside to pee. Her eyes never stop shining. It makes me wish I was little again, and everything could be solved with a Christmas Day puppy. I only check my phone once to see if Peter called, and he didn't. Chapter 68. The morning of the party, I come downstairs after 10, and they've been working for hours. Margot's the head chef, and Daddy's her sous chef. She has him chopping onions and celery and washing pots. To us, she says, Lara Jean, I need you to clean the downstairs bathroom and mop and tidy. Kitty, you're overseeing decorations. Can we at least have some cereal first? I ask. Yes, but be quick about it. She goes back to scooping cookie dough. To Kitty, I whisper, I didn't even want to have this party, and now she's got me scrubbing the toilet. Why do you get the good job?
Because I'm the littlest, Kitty says, climbing onto a stool at the breakfast bar.
Margot spins around and says, Hello, the toilet needed to be scrubbed anyway. Besides, it'll all be worth it. We haven't done recital party in so long. She slides a cookie sheet into the oven. Daddy, I'm going to need you to make a run to the store soon. We're out of sour cream, and we need a big bag of ice.
Aye, aye, Captain, our dad says.
The only one of us Margot doesn't put to work is Jamie Fox Pickle, who's taking a nap under the Christmas tree. I'm wearing a red and green plaid bow tie with a white button-down and a tartan skirt. I read on a fashion blog that mixing plaids is a thing. I go to Kitty's room to beg her to give me a braid crown, and she curls her lip at me and says, That's not very sexy. I frown. Excuse me? I wasn't trying to look sexy. I was trying to look festive. Well, you look like you're a Scottish waiter or maybe a bartender at a bar in Brooklyn.
What do you know about bartenders in Brooklyn, Catherine? I demand.
She gives me a withering look.
Duh, I watch HBO.
We might need to put some parental controls on the TV.
Kitty goes to my closet and pulls out my red off-the-shoulder knit dress with the swishy skirt.
Wear this. It's still Christmassy, but less elf costumey.
Fine, but I'm putting my candy cane pin on it.
Fine, you can wear the pin, but leave your hair down. No braid.
I give her my best sad pouty face, but Kitty shakes her head.
I'll curl the ends to give it some body, but no braids of any kind.
I plug in the curling iron and sit on the floor with Jamie in my lap, and Kitty sits on the bed and sections my hair off. She wraps my hair around the barrel like a real pro.
Did Josh RSVP yes to the party? She asks me.
I'm not sure, I say.
What about Peter?
He's not coming, I say.
Why not?
He just can't, I tell her. Margot's at the piano playing Blue Christmas, and our old piano teacher, Mr. Choi, is sitting next to her singing along. Across the room, Daddy's showing off a new cactus to the Shaws from down the street, and Kitty and Josh and a few of the other little kids are trying to teach Jamie how to sit. I'm sipping cranberry and ginger ale punch and talking to Aunt Dee about her divorce when Peter Kavinsky walks in wearing a hunter green sweater with a button-down shirt underneath, carrying a Christmas tin. I almost choke on my punch. Kitty spots him when I do.
You came! She cries.
She runs right into his arms, and he puts down the cookie tin and picks her up and throws her around.
When he sets her down, she takes him by the hand and over to the buffet table, where I'm busying myself rearranging the cookie plate.
"Look what Peter brought," she says, pushing him forward.
He hands me the cookie tin.
"Here. Fruitcake cookies my mom made."
"What are you doing here?" I whisper accusingly.
"The kid invited me."
He jerks his head toward Kitty, who has conveniently run back over to the puppy. Josh is standing up now, looking over at us with a frown on his face.
"We need to talk."
So now he wants to talk? Well, too late. We don't have anything to talk about. Peter takes me by the elbow, and I try to shake him off, but he won't let go. He steers me into the kitchen. "I want you to make up an excuse to Kitty and leave," I say, "and you can take your fruitcake cookies with you. First, tell me why you're so pissed at me."
"Because," I burst out. "Everyone is saying how we had sex in the hot tub and I'm a slut and you don't even care."
"I told the guys we didn't."
"Did you? Did you tell them that all we did was kiss and that's all we've ever done?"
Peter hesitates and I go on.
"Or did you say,
'Guys, we didn't have sex in the hot tub, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.'"
Peter glares at me.
"Give me a little more credit than that, Covey."
"You're such a scumbag, Kavinsky." I spin around. There is Josh in the doorway glaring at Peter.
"It's your fault people are saying that crap about Lara Jean."
Josh shakes his head in disgust. "She'd never do that."
"Keep your voice down," I whisper, my eyes darting around. "This is not happening right now. At recital party, with everyone I've ever known my whole entire life in the next room?"
Peter's jaw twitches.
"This is a private conversation, Josh, between me and my girlfriend. Why don't you go play World of Warcraft or something? Or maybe there's a Lord of the Rings marathon on TV."
"Fuck you, Kavinsky," Josh says. I gasp. To me, Josh says, "Lara Jean, this is exactly what I've been trying to protect you from. He's not good enough for you. He's only bringing you down." Beside me, Peter stiffens.
"Get over it. She doesn't like you anymore. It's over. Move on."
"You have no idea what you're talking about," Josh says.
"Whatever, dude. She told me you tried to kiss her. You try that again, and I'm kicking your ass."
Josh lets out a short laugh.
"Go ahead."
Panic rises in my chest as Peter moves toward Josh with purpose. I pull Peter's arm back.
"Stop it!"
That's when I see her. Margot, standing a few feet behind Josh, her hand to her mouth. The piano music has stopped. The world has stopped spinning because Margot has heard everything. "It's not true, is it? Please tell me it's not true." I open and close my mouth. I don't have to say anything because she already knows. Margot, who knows me so well.
"How could you?"
she asks, and her voice trembles. The hurt in her eyes makes me want to die. I've never seen that look in her eyes before.
"Margot," Josh begins, and she shakes her head and backs away.
"Get out," she says, her voice breaking. Then she looks at me.
"You're my sister. You're the person I trust more than anybody."
"Go, wait." But she's already gone. I hear her feet run up the stairs. I hear her door shut and not slam. And then I burst into tears.
"I'm so sorry," Josh says to me.
Bleakly, he says, "This is all my fault." He walks out the back door. Peter moves to put his arms around me, but I stop him.
Can you just go?"
Hurt and surprise register on his face.
"Sure, I can go,"
he says, and he walks out of the kitchen. I go to the bathroom off the side of the kitchen and sit on the toilet and cry. Someone knocks, and I stop crying and call out,
"Just a minute."
Mrs. Shaw's cheery voice says,
"Sorry, dear."
And I hear her heels clack away. Then I get up and splash cold water on my face. My eyes are still red and puffy. I run water over a hand towel and I wet my face with it.
My mom used to do this for me when I was sick. She'd put an ice-cold washcloth over my forehead, and she'd switch it out with a fresh one when it wasn't cold anymore. I wish my mom was here. When I step back into the party, Mr. Choi is sitting at the piano playing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Ms. Rothschild has my dad cornered on the couch. She's throwing back champagne, and he has a mildly startled look on his face. As soon as he sees me, my dad jumps off the couch and over to me.
Oh, thank God, he says. Where's Gogo? We haven't done our number yet.
She doesn't feel well, I say.
I'll go check on her.
I think she just wants to be left alone. Daddy's forehead creases.
Did she and Josh have a fight? I just saw him leave.
I swallow. Maybe. I'll go talk to her. He pats me on the shoulder.
You're a good sister, honey.
I force a smile. Thank you, Daddy. I go upstairs, and Margot's bedroom door is locked. I stand outside it and ask, Can I come inside? No answer. Please, Margot, please let me explain. Still nothing. I'm sorry, Margot. I'm so sorry. Please talk to me. I sit down outside her door and start to cry. My big sister knows how to hurt me best. Silence from her, being shut out by her, is the worst punishment she could conjure up. Chapter 69. Before Mommy died, Margot and I were enemies. We battled constantly, mostly because I was always messing up something of hers, some game, some toy. Margot had a doll she loved named Rochelle. Rochelle had silky auburn hair, and she wore glasses like Margot did. Mommy and Daddy had given her to her for her 7th birthday. Rochelle was Margot's only doll. She adored her. I remember begging Margot to let me hold her, just for a second, but Margot always said no. There was this one time I had a cold, and I stayed home from school. I crept into Margot's room, and I took Rochelle. I played with her all afternoon. I pretended Rochelle and I were best friends. I got it into my head that Rochelle's face was actually kind of plain. She would look better with lipstick on. It would be a favor to Margot if I made Rochelle more beautiful. I got one of Mommy's lipsticks out of her bathroom drawer, and I put some on her lips. Right away, I knew it was a mistake. I'd drawn it on outside of her lip lines. She looked clownish, not sophisticated. So then I tried to clean off the lipstick with toothpaste, but it only made her look like she had a mouth disease. I hid under my blankets until Margot came home. When she found the state Rochelle was in, I heard Margot scream. After Mommy died, we all had to realign ourselves. Everybody had new roles. Margot and I were no longer locked in battle because we both understood that Kitty was ours to take care of now. Look out for your sister, Mommy was always saying. When she was alive, we did it begrudgingly. After she was gone, we did it because we wanted to. Days go by and still nothing. She looks through me, speaks to me only when necessary. Kitty watches us with worried eyes. Daddy is bewildered and asks what's going on with us, but doesn't push me for an answer. There is a wall between us now, and I can feel her moving farther and farther away from me. Sisters are supposed to fight and make up, because they are sisters, and sisters always find their way back to each other. But the thing that scares me is that maybe we won't. Chapter 70. Outside my window, snow is falling in clumps that look like cotton. The yard is starting to look like a cotton field. I hope it snows all day and all night. I hope it's a blizzard. There's a knock at my door. I lift my head up from my pillow. Come in. My dad comes in and sits down at my desk.
So,
he says, scratching his chin the way he does when he's uncomfortable.
We need to talk.
My stomach drops.
I sit up and wrap my arms around my knees.
Did Margot tell you?
My dad clears his throat.
She did.
I can't even look at him.